Thank you.
I'm going to try hard not to beat you to death with one, but I do have a little agenda that I'm going to pass around. I'll save one. And this agenda includes a couple of websites. It includes the MSU Turf website that has a lot of really nice kind of 1-2 page files that you could download and read or print. I brought a bunch of them with me. I already had a supply of these photocopied, and I bumped the number up to 20. So I have 20 copies of quite a variety of turf tips for the homeowner from Michigan State and some other things. One thing that's on that top website on the agenda that I didn't photocopy because it's a lengthy publication by a guy named Frank Rossi, who I think is at Cornell University now, but he was at Michigan State. And he put together a real nice, I don't know if it's 25 or 30 pages, a real nice publication on chemical-free lawn mowing. Trying to take care of your lawn without using synthetic fertilizers and weed control sprays and those kind of things. So if that is your target is to have a nicer lawn without using any chemicals, kind of an organic approach, then I suggest that you take a look at that publication. That's not particularly the approach I'm taking tonight. It's a tall order to have a nice lawn without using commercial fertilizers. And it's a really tall order to have a relatively weed-free, not weed-free, but it's hard to keep weeds under control without using occasionally some kind of a spray. I dropped this thing. Did anybody see me drop this? Did it all fly to pieces?
Look at that.
Target product. We're going to start with what your lawn really means to you. This is sort of a continuum. I run into people sometimes that say my lawn is just nothing but a big pain to me. I don't like mowing it. I don't like taking care of it. This is my brother, the peanut breeder. my brother's the brain trust of the Islam family. He became a professor. He's a professor at North Carolina State University. He's a peanut breeder. He's a plant geneticist. He hates lawns. He thinks lawns are a curse. He doesn't want to mow it, doesn't want to fertilize it, doesn't want to do anything. He said, I'd like to just haze my lawn and paint it clean to keep the neighbors off my back. And then we have people on the other end that want that Grosse Pointe Hills lawn. Now they want that perfect, they want that perfect lawn. The one with no weeds, carpet-like texture, dense turf, dark green, no dandelions, no bare spots, no moss, perfect.
No buckwheat.
No wild buckwheat, no nothing. And they'll go to great lengths to get that. They'll hire a contractor to a green lawn or chem lawn contractor to do that. And maybe you're in the room tonight. I'm not knocking you. I'm not knocking my brother that would like to paint his tarmac green. That's okay. It's all okay with me. But there is a continuum, and I try to recognize that and accommodate that. But if you want a showplace lawn, there's some things to take into consideration. Soil quality is going to impact your ability to have a nice lawn. You really have to pay attention to what kind of soil you have when you set your goal. Well, how nice can my lawn be? Am I on a really sandy site? Well, then I'm going to have to tolerate not so dense of a lawn and one that is going to have more bare spots and more moss and those kind of things. So soil texture, you remember what soil texture is all about?
Mm-hmm.
Soil texture is the combination of clay, silt, and sand particles. So you might have clay soil or sand soil or something in between. A nice loam or a sandy loam is that's a nice soil. How much organic matter is in there? What's the structure of the soil? How deep is the topsoil? What is the drainage like? Some of these things can be improved, some of them can't. pH is one of the easiest ones to change. Soil acidity. and you change that by addition of lime, usually, if your soil is acidic. In some rare cases, garden soils get to be too basic, too sweet on the other end of the pH scale. Usually that's because people have put on too much wood ash out of the wood furnace, or they put on too much lime over the years. But usually it's a matter of soil acidity. And fertility levels can really be a bottleneck for a nice lawn. Oftentimes you can do a whole lot by just adjusting soil pH and getting a grip, getting a handle on your fertility in the lawn. All right, site quality, how much, what's the balance of shade and sun? It's frustrating for people that want a nice lawn if they got 10 maple trees in their, you know, 8-acre lot. You're going to have a problem having a nice lawn. And you can make a difference in your quality of your lawn by taking out low-growing branches out of all those maple trees. I speak from experience here. I have some big maple trees in my lawn. Two of them. I'm on just a city lot in Unison. Two great, big specimen maple trees. And I took out lower branches, and all of a sudden, bingo, I got grasses sticking up underneath. Because it probably got 2 or 3 more hours of sunlight every day during the summer. Mm-hmm. It made a real difference. So if you're having chronic trouble and you've got a lot of trees, thinning out some branches, taking out some low-growing ones can really, really impact your grass, your lawn quality. Competition, you probably, some of you have met or heard Pete Nicola talk. Pete sold his business up there in Hancock and is leaving the area or has left. But Pete, one of his quotes I picked up over the years was, you can either have maple trees or you can have other things. he was talking about ornamental plants, other trees and shrubs. You can have grass and maple trees, but a lot of our lawn trees really provide big competition for grass. They have a very, very dense, well-developed feeder root system that goes out about as far from the base of the tree as the tree is tall and competes for water and nutrients with the grass. So you have to keep that in mind. And slope and contour affect the quality of the site. Traffic considerations also come into play with lawn quality. How often do you have a big party at your house, your lawn? We don't have big parties on our lawn very often. I have 3 kids. One of them's 27. One of them's 24, I think. The other one's 18, graduating from high school this May. We're going to have a big party on the lawn. Keep the lawn all smithereens. So once in a while, you have a wedding or a graduation or a family reunion, and it can beat up your lawn. And plus, if you have young children or grandkids or a lot of dogs, or even one dog sometimes, it'd be tough on your lawn. Is the existing turf, what species are in it, and if you do or don't water, have a real impact on your lawn quality. We're going to talk about most all of these things. Here's some more pieces. Weed pressure. How weedy is the lawn? Is that a real issue with you? Are you offended by a lot of weeds in the lawn? Or do you think, hey, they belong there, I just mow them, they're green, I'm happy to see them. Well, then come and step along the continuum, you're kind of down towards the system.
I need to eat some of
them. Yeah, first lane is good to eat, and mowing practices, this is one that pretty much everybody that has a lawn, somebody mows it. And how it gets mowed impacts the quality of the lawn, the mowing height, frequency of mowing. Those things are pretty easy to, well, it's pretty straightforward to make adjustments. It's not always easy because you don't necessarily have more time this summer than you did last summer. Keeping my yard mowed is I don't mind doing it. I kind of enjoy doing it, but having time to do it is the key thing. What kind of equipment you have available to work on the lawn, what kind of financial resources you want to invest in the lawn, yes.
What about the height? You know, mowing. How high should you have the blade set to mow the grass?
Well, that's an excellent question. And if you're irrigating the lawn, watering it regularly, have an aggressive fertilizer program, have a full sun lawn, and a Kentucky bluegrass mixture. You know, if you have the real top flight kind of lawn, you can mow it shorter. You can mow it an inch and a half in height. If you want to have your lawn under less stress and not have to manage it so carefully, so that if it doesn't get watered or you have an event where there's a lot of traffic on it, something's going to beat it up. If you would raise that mowing height to 2.5 inches or even 3, that's pretty tall. But then that grass plant has more leaf area. Mm-hmm. And when you mow it, you're taking off less as a percentage. If you mow, let's say you have your mower, you got a push mower, plain Jane push mower. It's got 5 notches. Everybody familiar with the settings on your mower? Mm-hmm. You can raise it or lower it. Well, probably that lowest one is probably 1.5 inches mower height. And the top one is probably 3 inches.
Yeah.
Not number 4, I'd say, is probably 2.5. And that's where I would suggest if you want to have the healthiest lawn possible, not necessarily the snappiest looking one. And this is all a matter of taste, you know. My dad always thought that having that real carpet-like lawn was very attractive and elegant. And as he got older, and he didn't want to work on the lawn so much, he said, I'm going to raise the mower height. And so when you walk across it, when the lawn's not dried out, the lawn's not under stress, but when you walk across it, you can see your footprint because the grass is pushed over a little.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of what you give up for mowing it higher. It's an awful long answer to your question, but two and a half inches, I think, is a reasonable height.
So I find your sheep good.
Sheep?
Probably 2 inches.
Yeah.
So for an event when your son graduates, then at that point, what's the best advantage? What would you mow it at?
Probably 4 inches.
However,
I'd
25. However, I want it, that's how it would be. But I keep mine mowed about 2.5 inches when I mow it. It'll be better able to bounce back because it won't be so stressed. See, the idea is you got this grass that, and you don't want to cut off more than a third of it at a time. That's the rule of thumb. That's the golden rule. If you want to your grass as you would have somebody do it to you, don't cut off more than a third of me at a time. Because that leaves two-thirds of that leaf blade left to photosynthesize, to help that plant regrow and to respond. Now, if you let it get 4 or 5 inches tall, like none of you would ever do, and then you go in and you mow it down to 2 inches, hey, you've taken off more than 50%. And really, as that grass plant develops, you know what a grass plant looks like. When you pick it up, you pick it out to chew it, it's kind of white and the leaves are curled tight down at the bottom and then they expand. Well, you cut the leaf blade basically all the way off, and it has to bring up reserves from its stored carbohydrates to regrow. Whereas if you cut a third of it off and you still have a half or more of the green leaf area left there, it can grow back a lot more readily. All right, just another general slide here about the life cycle of cool season grasses. That's what we're talking about, you know. You may see advertisements for zoysia grass and Bermuda grass and all these kind of grasses that they grow. St. Augustine grass. They grow them in Florida and Georgia and California and Arizona. We don't grow them in Michigan. Those are warm season grasses. The only warm season grass you're going to be hearing about these days is switchgrass as an energy crop. But cool season grasses. Now, this chart is kind of a mess for the whole state of Michigan, and we have to make some allowances here because we don't have much. Not much happening in Ironwood in March in the grass. So, but this is the basic curve in the spring. You know, the grass breaks dormancy, the roots develop, and the top develops. It goes into the warm part of the summer. There's a slump of growth, and this is very typical of our lawns. Yeah, they grow in the peaks in what the first, second week of June.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the weather starts warming up good, and we get a little drier weather, another root size that too. It pops, quick growing. And hopefully when the moisture resumes in the end of August, weather's cooling down, we get another smaller spurt of growth. So we have two humps in this graph, two flushes of growth with a summer slump in the middle. And that's an important thing to remember about your lawn. That's what it wants to do naturally. Now, we try to do some things to keep that from happening, like water. If you have an underground and in-ground water, anybody have an in-ground watering system? Anybody water regularly through the summer? Water your lawn? We got one.
I have an in-husband.
An in-husband, okay. What you're doing is you're trying to buck the system when you water through the summer. There's nothing wrong with that as long as you're consistent and systematic about it. You're trying to maintain this level and not let the grass go into that summer dormancy. Where it browns out, it gets a little less attractive, weeds kind of, the summer weeds sort of take off. All right, now we're gonna move into a few of these specific things like weed control in the lawn. The last thing I'm gonna talk about is an overview of a lawn renovation program, which you can take pieces of if you want, or you could go through the whole thing and make your husband go through the whole thing. Son-in-law. I have a new son-in-law, and I'm finding that this is a good thing. I didn't like it at all until he really got serious about marrying my daughter, and then now I think he's pretty fine. Yeah. So we're going to talk about that. There are lots of weeds out there that will impact your lawn, grasses and broadleaves. We got tall fescue and crabgrass and annual bluegrass. Some of them are annual, some of them are perennials. We have some biennial broadleaf weeds, like shepherd's purse. Can anybody name some of the broadleaves? Either an annual or biennial.
Plantain.
Dandelion, sure.
And a buckhorn, is that a broadleaf? It's got
buckhorn plantain.
Is that a spiky seed head.
There are some real tough ones that show up now and then. Wild violet is a very difficult one to control. And the best thing, of course, is a dense, healthy turf that will be able to compete with weed seedling to choke them out. That's the best one. But herbicides are an option, and so is physical removal of things like perennial grasses. Like, you get these patches of odd-colored grasses.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean it's mixed in with your lawn. I mean, mm-hmm. you got a patch of it that just keeps growing every year.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a real coarse-bladed grass, it's probably a tall fescue. If it's a funny little fine-bladed grass, it might be bent grass. Bent grass is the kind of grass on putting greens at the golf course. But it can be a lawn weed. It can get established in your lawn and become a patch of odd-colored, odd-textured grass. In those cases, digging them out is certainly a good option. Herbicides are also an option. And if you had a patch that was just either taken over by a perennial grass or the grass, the desirable grass was just choked out, it can be sprayed with Roundup herbicide. Anybody familiar with Roundup?
Mm-hmm.
Most gardeners are.
Yeah.
There are also broadleaf formulations, like Weed Be Gone, broadleaf lawn spray, or any number of manufacturers. Most of those formulations contain two very tried and true old herbicides, especially the low cost ones, the low cost spray that you either run through a hose end sprayer or mix in a pump up sprayer and spray, or the kind that come as a weed and seed with your fertilizer and you spread them on the lawn. Those herbicides are 2,4-D, which is a broad spectrum broadleaf herbicide. Pretty much it's effective on many broadleaves, like it's murder on dandelions, it's great on plantains, it's not very good on ground ivy or wild violet, some of the tough ones, white clover if you want to get that out of your lawn. And dicamba is the other ingredient in those common broadleaf herbicides. There is a newer one called triclopyr, and you have to just look on the labels of the products to see what's in there. Triclopyr, and it's better on the tougher broadleaf. But what I want to really say about that is that the timing of application is really critical. It's very critical. You can't get rid of a lot of these broadleaf weeds in the end of May or the first part of June. You'll knock them, they'll curl up and they'll look sick, then they'll come back. It doesn't kill them. But if you wait and do your main routine weed control, let's say you're going to treat for weeds once a year or once every 2 years or once every 3 years, wait until the fall to do it. Wait until a nice sunny day when it's over 50 degrees, and that could, if that was in October, that would be the best. And you spray this weed and seed. I should talk a little about that too. But if you apply herbicides later in the fall, think about it. In the springtime, that dandelion, it's got a taproot down in the soil, full of carbohydrates. It doesn't have any leaves on top to produce any sugars. So it is mobilizing its resources from the root system and the food storage, and things tend to be moving in an upward direction. And there is a, you know, there are leaves by May, dandelions are starting to flower, and, you know, they're growing. But still, things are still coming up from below just to stimulate all of that. In the fall, they are preparing for winter dormancy. And they are translocating sugars down into the roots. So when you put that herbicide on the leaves, it is much more likely to get translocated down into the root system and kill the plant in the fall compared to the spring. Now think again, if you're trying to kill an annual broadleaf like chickweed or oxalis, that funny little clover-looking weed with the little yellow flowers, you ain't going to do anything to that in the fall. That thing has already set seed and dropped seed for next year, and the plants die in the fall. It's an annual. So you would need to spray that when you see the first flower. That's the time to hit that before it makes any seed. With an herbicide, with the same herbicide as you would use in the fall. Okay? There are some pre-emergent formulations, and those are for annual grasses, like crabgrass and annual bluegrass. And those are generally dry formulations. They sometimes are mixed with fertilizers, or they're just a dry thing you run through your spreader. And those the soil moisture, either rain or dew or whatever, dissolves that formulation, and it penetrates into the soil just a little bit, a quarter inch, a half inch, and it creates a barrier so that when that crabgrass seed starts to germinate, the herbicide kills it. And those herbicides last for about 6 weeks. They provide about a 6 week barrier to germination. And then they dissipate, break down, and they're gone. So you have to get them applied to the lawn to prevent annual bluegrass or crabgrass from germinating. You've got to put it on before those seeds. And those seeds don't germinate early in the season. They wait. They don't. So the biological cue for putting on these crabgrass preventers is when the forsythia blooms. That's when you put it on. That's a good indicator. If somebody in your neighborhood has a forsythia plant, I'll wait for it to get all yellow. But, that guy from the community says, now's the time to put on crabgrass for them.
What about the creeping ivy or the ground ivy?
Ground ivy is the more challenging one. You have some of that?
Yeah, I do. You don't.
You spray it in the late fall, as late as you can. That might be the end of September or October.
Many times in the year.
and look for a product that has this triclopyr in it. The guys, I had a good long talk a few years back with the two guys who to put together these DVDs. This is Lawn Care University from MSU, and this is Lawn Care 101. This is Ron Calhoun. He's a faculty member in the Department of Crop and Soil Science, and he's in turf grass management. That's his specialty. And this guy is Kevin Frank. And what these DVDs are is little short clips about dealing with all kinds of lawn topics. And I had a chance to visit with these guys while I was down at MSU one time. And they said, I was talking to them about these, I wasn't talking about ground ivy, I was talking about the wild violet, which is a similarly difficult weed to get rid of. And they said, oh, you've been using the 4T system, you've been using the 3T system, you got to use the 4T system. And then I said, what's that? And they said, the 3T system was, oh, by the way, before I tell you, Trimec is the trade name for this combination of 2,4-D and dicamba that I described before. Trimec. 3T meant try Trimec twice. 4T was this time try Triclopyr.
I thought that was pretty good.
Well, I know you can't see these so much, but these are just some little photos of some common lawn weeds, hawkweed, we used to call it Indian paintbrush, broadleaf plantain, and then you mentioned the other one, buckhorn plantain.
Buckhorn, yeah.
Mouse ear chickweed. This is an annual. Knotweed.
That one was bad.
Knotweed. Real low growing, prostrate kind of weed. Before we move on to fertilizing, any other questions or comments or thoughts about weeds?
Well, I just wanted to ask, I didn't get it straight here, that buckhorn, you're saying that is better to put on your weed and feed in the fall?
Yeah, that'll take it up. That one is pretty vulnerable.
Okay.
Most of the time.
Because I got a lot of that in my hands.
And plantains are pretty easy to accommodate. There's one thing I wanted to mention before we moved on, and that was these different formulations. You know, you got liquid concentrates, and those are really a good value. They're more work for sure. You got to get a hose end sprayer. You got to handle all that hose. You know, I got this 100-foot hose, and it's a real drag to pull that hose back so it's not in the place you just sprayed, and you know, cover the whole lawn with a hose end sprayer. Or you can mix the stuff in a 3-gallon pump-up sprayer and wear yourself out pumping that thing up and keeping it pumped up and spraying. I've done both of those. The advantage of using one of the liquid concentrates, you get to pick the time. And timing, I'm just more and more convinced, has a lot to do with success of weed control using chemicals in your lawn. Well, Jim, why don't you just use them? Why don't we just use the weed and feed? Fine. Weed and feed is great. And fall fertilization on your lawn is the most important fertilizer application. So that mesh is good. Weed and feed, fertilizer in the fall, good choice. In the spring, if your problem is perennial weeds and you use weed and feed fertilizer in, you know, third, fourth week of May, you're not going to be very satisfied with the weed control results because the weeds aren't, some of them aren't very vulnerable at that time of the summer. And in the middle of the summer, if you're putting on more fertilizer, weeds aren't very vulnerable in the middle of summer, usually, unless it's nice and cool and wet. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to sneeze, but it kind of passed.
You're lucky.
Yeah.
I'm hearing comments from people about weed and feed and the effect on wildlife. Do the birds actually pick up this stuff and it's harmful to them?
I've heard people
complain there's no squirrels in our neighborhood anymore. John Doe down the road is using a chemical on his lawn and they're gone now. I don't know what's happened in our area and I haven't really talked to many people, but I don't know what happened to the goldfinches, but the goldfinches that I used to have oodles of, almost none last year. You're talking about how it did a beautiful green lawn, but what is the effect? what are we doing to our water system? What are we doing to our wildlife? What's okay?
That is a really a great question. And I haven't read or seen any data that indicates that homeowner type herbicides and fertilizers have had an impact on squirrel or songbird populations. I can't say it hasn't, but if you are careful to follow the label instructions and not overapply these materials, not apply them at the wrong time at the wrong rate, they should be safe environmentally. That's arguable, I know, but that's about the best answer I have. I haven't heard or seen any. Has anybody else seen anything?
Pretty hard study.
Those things are hard to get a handle on, and there was an awful lot of resistance when Rachel Carlson published her book Silent Spring. You know, there was resistance to that. That can't be true. But then DDT can't be causing the raptors to be all gone. But it was. It was true. So I'm not disrespecting the question. I just don't know what the answer is.
Well, I think if you have pests and if you spray, make sure it dries, and we don't even let our pest walk on that grass until it rains.
Mm-hmm.
Because all animals, you know, everything goes up through there.
Yeah.
Everything
that walks.
And then cats all the way to lick the paw.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe kill some of my deer.
And then climb on your lap. Then you put your hand down there. You go and eat.
You get it too.
Hey, yeah. Yes, sir.
I decided to. I got a seed catalog with these flowers that you can grow on your, you know, for your lawn. That's what I'm doing. I'm not going to mow my grass anymore. I'm going to set flowers all over.
Get rid of the lawn.
Yeah.
Good
idea.
You're okay with that?
One guy in Marquette built a kind of unusual home. He's an Englishman. He built his home all out of rock. And he also got, instead of a lawn, he landscaped his yard, and he made you know, curvy-shaped beds. And some of them had shrubbery and trees, and some of them had perennials, and some had, I think he might have had some vegetable garden there. And in between all of these all had border around them, some kind of a border, and in between them was shredded bark. And it was very attractive, and not a blade of grass anymore. All right. Let's move on to fertilizers. There's quite a spectrum of fertilizers, too. There's no miracle products. Some are certainly better than others, and some are more expensive than others. Cheap fertilizers are simply chemical salts. They dissolve in water. They become quickly available to plants for uptake. In a coarse textured soil that's droughty, where water moves through quickly, those fertilizers will move through with it, and so you lose a lot of the potential value of fertilizer gets lost. I'll call them cheap fertilizers. They are cheap. They're inexpensive. They don't have any bells and whistles. They're not slow release. They're not organic. They're just your plain Jane agricultural kind of fertilizer. They're relatively short lasting, and they are less safe. By safe, I mean as far as burning your lawn or killing earthworms, things like that. And they leach more quickly. They'll flow through more quickly. Here's that photo shows some misapplication of fertilizer, where somebody was spreading it in a drop spreader and didn't overlap, and it really shows if you do a goofy job with your lawn fertilizer. I've been on some visits to people's homes where lawns were killed by overapplication of fertilizer. More expensive fertilizers, they have a percentage of the granules of fertilizer are coated with varying thicknesses of coating. So the coating slowly dissolves in a moist environment. Some of the particles aren't coated at all, so they dissolve immediately and they're available for plant uptake. And then ones that have a thin coating, they dissolve after a few weeks, and then they're available. And ones that have a thicker coating, they're all in the same bag when you bring it home. So the nutrients are released slowly. They're also salts. They are not, the nutrient portion of these fertilizers is not really chemically different from the cheap ones. It's just that they're packaged different, they're treated. They're longer lasting and they're safer. And I mentioned a drop spreader. This is the type of a spreader I meant, where it has an agitator that kind of goes around down by the slot and it drops out. And they're much more precise. Those types of applicators are very precise. If you are an engineer, or if you balance, you know, if you reconcile your checkbook to the penny the day that a statement comes in, this is the machine for you. Now, if you are a little looser and kind of more licking a promise, this would be the machine for you. And, of course, everybody's in between there somewhere. This is the machine for me. I'm always in a hurry when I'm doing this. I don't want to have to pay attention to exactly where the wheel marks were on the last pass. But you better pay attention to where the wheel marks were on the last pass, or you'll have something like that photo I showed you a minute ago.
Or you can do a half strength application one way and half strength.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Know your fertilizer. Lawn fertilizers are not all the same. Not by a long shot. The first number is nitrogen, second one's phosphorus, third one's potassium. Some lawn fertilizers include iron and sulfur and some extras like that. The MSU recommendation, and most